Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1984 classic, The Terminator, directed by James Cameron.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, very nice mug you got there.
Wow, it's a great mug. I'm gonna win one tonight, I hear.
Yeah, I hope so. Do you have a solution to the problem, we think?
Nope.
Tonight we're gonna start the contest, correctly diagnose Drew's illness and win a mug. But first, before we get into Terminator talk, any housekeeping? We'll start with Jason.
Nope, I got nothing this week.
Okay, Drew.
I managed to get through the entire first season of Better Call Saul. Have either of you guys seen that?
Yes.
No.
It's awesome.
It was really good, and surprisingly, one of the main themes is brothers and relationships between brothers, which I was not expecting.
And the difficulties within.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Michael McKean, right?
Yeah, Michael McKean is Saul's brother.
And who's Saul? Is that Bob Odenkirk?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And is it played for comedy, or is it sort of a drama?
It's a dark comedy.
Yeah, I mean, it fits right in the Breaking Bad wheelhouse. I mean, it's tense. It's dramatic, but there's also some funny stuff.
There hasn't been anywhere near the body count as Breaking Bad,
no.
Though. Yeah. That's no. Like Breaking Bad light. There's just not, there's no death.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just as much Breaking Bad as you would want for a totally separate story that takes place before Walter White ever got diagnosed with cancer.
But there are lots of callbacks that are, I guess, not really callbacks, but there's a lot of people from the show Breaking Bad that end up in this show. And so you get to see some origins of characters because you go back and see like, oh my God, Tuco.
So do you have to have watched Breaking Bad?
No.
You don't have to, but if you have, or if you're at least familiar with the characters from Breaking Bad, you'll get some of the little Easter eggs they put in there and some of the non-central storylines will probably matter a little bit more to you.
Yeah, the nice things they add will not in any way distract you if you don't understand or realize them. So if you've seen Breaking Bad, you'll get the great little Easter eggs, and you'll get the smiles and the inside jokes. Otherwise, you'll move on.
Anything else on the housekeeping list?
I second your fuck Netflix sentiment that you expressed either last podcast or the one before. It's now taking a solid week to turn anything around.
Oh yeah, and
on disc, it's ridiculous.
It's not just Tacoma, turns out, also Portland. So it's just the nearest distribution center is getting further and further away.
Oh, I only stream, so I don't have physical media.
I may be going to that soon.
Yeah, but I did get the first 9 episodes of 12 Monkeys in the mail, so I'm looking forward to
excellent
starting that here probably in the next week.
Were there more than 9?
I don't know. I only got 2 discs.
I think that's it for the first season.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then I have the entire first season.
I think so, but I really loved it. I thought it was fantastic, so... It can be a little disorienting because there's some back and forth. It's any show that has the the peril of time travel. You have to pay attention because, you know, you can sometimes get swept away with what time period you're at. They do a pretty good job, though, of really delineating which time frame you're in.
Well, I think that would be a good one to watch after spending 31 episodes in the Sarah Connor Chronicles universe.
Which I just watched the pilot last night.
Yep, I am through episode 7 of season 1, so I have 2 more in season 1 and then season 2 to go. So I'll be all ready. Well, it's very interesting, but we will talk about that as we get there. My housekeeping, one thing I wanted to do was actually to, and nobody asked for this, but,
those are the best ones.
Well, I was listening to, I would say I edited it, and I listened to, our episode again, where we recommended the United Nations of Horror. And I can see where you could think it was sort of a dick move that all I said was that I was making fun of the Americans, trying to introduce the British people to Macbeth. But truly, the show is well researched, and they dig into a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of different hosts, so there's a lot of different angles that they look at things and different areas of expertise they have. So it's really I can't emphasize enough how in depth they go and how interesting it is. So if you're into horror movies, again, I will recommend the United Nations of Horror. And not just because they were so complimentary that Drew wanted to argue with them.
Did you notice the interesting things they were doing with their podcast feed this week?
No. What were they doing?
It kept showing up in my feed, but it didn't have a new episode. So I thought my podcatcher was screwing up. But I looked at it, and they were actually posting movie reviews. So no media file was attached, but it came up in the podcast feed. And, you know, it just had really long notes, and the notes were like entire movie reviews. Yeah, it was just a really, really creative use of a podcasting stream, I thought. I hadn't seen that before.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I did, this is a slight housekeeping, is our mom and I watched Spectre.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Have you seen it, Drew?
I have not. I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard it's really dumb.
Yeah, it's not super smart. It's not very fast paced. Although the action when it comes is good. I mean, I really like the action scenes. It's as most of the James Bond movies, it's really pretty. And now that I've watched a lot more James Bond movies, I am soaking up the atmosphere. So the slow parts are actually just an opportunity for me to look around and say, "Oh, it's the padded leather wall in M's office," and
yeah,
you know, the little touches that, you know, and like I had to, as Dave Bautista, I think is his name, I had to look up what car he was chasing the DB10 in, and it was like a Jaguar. So it's all very interesting. So I was digging the atmosphere. I think our mom thought it was a little bit snoozy, and my trainee at work was like, "Oh my God, I fell asleep after an hour and I will never watch that movie again. Daniel Craig was great in the first movie and all the rest of them just sucked."
Yeah, it wasn't the best.
What? Skyfall was amazing.
Yeah. Skyfall was good. Skyfall was better. Skyfall was better than Spectre, I would say. But Spectre was better than Quantum of Solace crap.
I found I enjoyed Spectre and Quantum of Solace more than I did Casino Royale, but I agree that Skyfall was the best one.
I still say Casino Royale is the best Bond, is the best Craig Bond film.
Yeah. Speaking of sort of silly action movies, I guess all my housekeeping is just now what I've been watching recently. But I had the opportunity over the past few weeks to watch movies with my wife, and we watched. Consecutively, we watched The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, and they were both way better than I expected them to be. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is actually really like stylish and fun in a way I didn't expect from a Guy Ritchie movie.
Now, did you have really lowered expectations, though?
I did. I mean, I remember kind of digging the TV show when I was a little kid.
Me too.
But, I mean, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., there's a great Solomon Burke song in it. which was a really, really fun scene with the Alicia Vikander from Ex Machina. She was good. And Mission Impossible Rogue Nation had like a kick-ass female spy in it. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so are we about ready for The Terminator?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, whose movie is The Terminator?
It's the Terminator trilogy, and I can say trilogy because I say Terminator, Terminator 2, and T3, were from my list.
But okay.
To back up just a little bit, to return to the housekeeping again. Out of my list of judgment, the only thing we haven't done is Grease.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's going to be a fun one.
Well, we somehow have to get our dear mother to join us for that.
We should. We can make it happen.
We do.
But no, we'll figure that one out.
Yeah. And again, I'm not, I mean, Grease isn't going anywhere anytime soon, so.
Did anybody see the live Grease?
No.
I tried.
It wasn't happening?
It wasn't happening.
Okay.
I think I didn't make it through the opening number. I was like, nope, I'm out.
Was it just too campy, or what was the, what just wasn't good enough to your memory of it, or?
Yeah, it was way too, music theater-ish, you know, not sort of, you know, I have really fond memories of movie Grease, which is not the same as, watching, what's her name? Jessie J, singing the Grease theme song and try and dance around while she's out of breath. And on my DVR, it was like 3 hours. I was like, nope, not going to happen.
Good for you.
But I was certainly interested in it because I love Grease.
Yeah, I'm having a flashback of a Grease memory now. So
okay, we'll jot a note.
And I'm not opposed to musical theater. I mean, one of my primary goals in life now is to wait until my daughter turns 5 so we can go to New York and watch Hamilton.
It's coming to LA this year too.
I saw that.
And Spamalot.
Well,
Spamalot. We saw Spamalot. You and me.
We did.
It was like a date.
Your lovely wife.
We went out to dinner, and it turned out to be prom night, and it was weird.
Where did we end up eating? I remember we tried to go to a place on Diamond and Old Seward.
Oh, Sweet 100.
Yeah, and that turned out to be a bust because they were too busy. But then I don't remember where we went.
I don't remember either. But Spamalot was fun for me because I'd always resisted watching any Monty Python, so all of the jokes were new and fresh.
No, I loved Spamalot. It was great. I'm sorry that your wife couldn't make it, but I was happy to take her place at the theater.
Yeah, that was fun. And that leads us right back into The Terminator.
Yes. So, Brother Jay, tell us about The Terminator.
In high school, The Terminator was kind of a movie that we would be just kind of one of those slumber party, up all night, crazy, sugar cracked out, overfed, teenage chill fest movie. So this would be one of the rotations of the movies we would watch. We would have like History of the World Part 1, Mel Brooks, and then Terminator would be one. And there was a couple other movies. Top Secret was another one. And then I think one of the Pink Panther movies. So it kind of really depended on the audience because the makeup of our clique would vary from weekend to weekend when we were together. So the movies we watch would change. But Terminator was one that was a pretty heavy rotation. So I have a fondness for it because it brings back, you know, high school memories of my peers that I, you know, as I get older, I cherish more and more. And then as I got older, I really dug the second Terminator movie. And I think at that time, I can't remember the timeline anymore because I'm getting too damn old, but I think I quit right before the third one, maybe. Maybe it was the second one. I quit the theater right at the, right before the, I think, the release. It must have been the second one.
No, you were definitely working the theater for the second one.
Was I?
Yeah, because me and Eric went to like one of those like midnight family showings to watch it.
Oh, well, I must have been there then. I can't imagine you guys would have gone without me.
No, we would not have been invited without you.
It was no Dirty Dancing.
No.
Yeah. Drew, what's your introduction to Terminator?
Wait, can I go off a quick tangent?
Of course.
Yeah. First,
it's the tangent podcast. It's on the mugs.
The sleepover story reminded me of a time in high school when me and my buddies were going to go to my friend Mark's cabin for the weekend. And we drove all the way out to Willow and found out that his cabin had been broken into. They had to call the trooper. Oh, we were on the way and he got a phone call from his parents that they'd called the troopers to go out there because his cabin had broken. So we ended up turning around Kinnick or Kinnick, if you're in the frozen ground, and going back and just deciding to hang out at his house, overnight and, rent some movies. So they put me in charge of going into Video City, and renting movies. So I got three movies and, it's high school. I was kind of an asshole, really, just interested in what I wanted to do more than anything else. So I rented movies that I was interested in and didn't really give much thought to whether they'd be like really fun movies to watch sort of in a group of high school guys who are just, trying to blow some time and have some fun. And, by the end of the movie marathon we had, my buddies were not too happy with my selections. Because I had picked out, Evil Dead 2, followed, by Deliverance.
Oh my
and
God.
Then we, by the way, nobody knew what Deliverance was about when we put it in.
Even you or just the other guys didn't know?
No, even me. It was just one of those movies that, was sort of in the pop culture lexicon. And, I know it had dueling banjos in it, but yeah, I didn't know.
Dueling banjos? I'm just looking for you. A bunch of guys hanging out, not trying to get in trouble, looking for just a real upbeat Burt Reynolds movie.
Yeah, it was about some buddies going on a rafting trip. And that was kind of similar to what we were doing. A bunch of buddies going out to a cabin. So we watched that, and then we ended the trilogy with The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I don't believe I've ever seen. That's Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, it's really good. It's kind of heavy, if you can imagine. Yeah, so they by the end of those three movies, they were they decided they were never letting me pick out movies again. Because Evil Dead 2, which I think I'd seen with you, Eric, when I was much younger... They didn't even really enjoy that because that movie was not what they were expecting.
No,
but I thought it was great. So I enjoyed all three movies. I thought all three movies were really good. But I was the only one. So that's my little tangent that you reminded me of.
See, now I have a Video City tangent.
Please.
Well, my dear friend Jerry Gillian, who has kind of, she and I have kind of shadowed each other back and forth across the country because, when I moved to Portland, she was leaving Kansas and she was deciding whether to come back to, she was deciding when moving from Kansas, whether to come to Portland or Seattle. And I was like, hey, I'm in Portland, come to Portland. And we kind of struck up our high school friendship again and, lived together in my apartment for a while. And then we moved in a house together and she moved back to Alaska and then she came back to Oregon and we've kind of been fallen, in and out of friendship. Well, we've always been friends, but I mean, we've fallen in and out of each other's presence repeatedly. But amongst all of our peer groups, we've always been able to pick up where we left off. But in high school, I think right before she left for college, I want to say, she'd had a car accident where she injured herself. It wasn't her fault, but she had to have surgery and for some reason we'd rented some movies and she was still watching them. And so I said, well, as long as you return them, you can keep them for a couple of days and we'll figure it out later. And then we get a call from Video City, 3 weeks later when the charges are like $80 a movie and the movies are nowhere to be found. And of course, contact Jerry and I think end up getting Jerry's mom and Jerry's mom's like, oh no, they're in her car right here. So I had to have the movies returned and it just ended up being one of those like, oops, expensive lessons. But I think her mom took care of it. It was one of those, in the days where each VHS tape was like $90 to buy. And there was a point where, buying it would have been cheaper than paying the rental fee.
there was some other podcast I listened to this week, and I don't remember which it was, but you had to, actually, maybe it was Do You Need a Ride, where they talked about, you know, in the good old days, to even get a video membership, you had to either put down a significant deposit or have a credit card on file that they could charge for a buttload of money. Like, it was like $100 to get a membership someplace. And after so like a year or something, you got your deposit back, maybe if you're a good customer, but maybe not.
Was the video place in the Huffman Park, what neighborhood video? Is that what it was?
Oh, man.
It later turned into the Blockbuster.
Yeah.
What was it? There was Creekside Video that was affiliated with it, right? On the other side of town?
Oh, I think so. It's really fuzzy.
Over in the Diamond Jewel Lake area?
But I think the neighborhood video was the one that, you know, that's where we had the membership first. And then eventually we morphed to Video City. But I think the neighborhood video, I think it was called Neighborhood Video. And that was, I remember that there was a deposit, and then getting like us as kids added was an ordeal. And then they had a limit of how many you could rent at a time. So you could only have a couple movies out at a time. So we had to really be wise and judicious with what we wanted to rent. Because if we all went in together for a weekend to get a couple movies, we could only get a movie apiece.
Oh, definitely. And you had to negotiate the different methods of video storage and control they had. Because I remember the first time I went into a Blockbuster, and I was stunned. Stunned, I tell you. When I picked up the box, the empty box, and brought it to the counter and said, I'd like to rent this one. And they said, well, where's the movie? Like, no, you're supposed to pull the movie back from out your secret door in the back. No, that's not how it is. It has a movie behind the one with the picture on it. Like, what kind of nonsense is this stuff? Except that's only internal thought. I'm like, okay. And I shuffle back and I got to figure out, damn it. This is too confusing for me. But the alternative was never going to Blockbuster again, which wasn't a really good alternative. So I had to just kind of suck it up and learn. Much rather would have just left and never come back. And hated the place for no reason. That was my go-to at that point in my life.
Well, you're finally getting your revenge.
Yeah. Oh, you know, there's the Blockbuster is still open there.
Yeah, it is.
It is, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, and since we're still tangential, Mother wanted to correct the fact that the alleged heart attack incident was not First Care, but some other place.
Like North Care or something?
Yeah.
The one down the street.
Yeah, we went on a besmirch. I'm having a lot of trouble today. I apologize. I wouldn't want to besmirch the fine name of First Care, which I think is like Health Works Primary Care blah-blah-blah corporation now.
Because I think it was Primary Care Associates is the one further down the street, and First Care was the one closer to the house.
Yeah, something like that.
I just remember having to constantly go to First Care because I had ear infections every damn 6 months.
Anyhow.
So, Terminator.
Terminator. Actually, you weren't done, were you, Drew? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't think I started. Oh. What was I supposed to start?
What your introduction to Terminator was.
I watched Terminator with you when I was like 10.
I'm sure.
That was my introduction. I loved it. I mean, I loved all the Arnold movies of the 80s. And I had very fond memories of it. I thought it was a really interesting story. So I've seen it many, many times over the years, and I've come to really appreciate the groundwork it laid for some fantastic storytelling to come, mostly from Terminator 2. But I think there's good stuff even later. So it was interesting for this effort to go back and watch it start to finish with sort of a different kind of eye to it. It was not quite the movie I remembered it to be, but it was very interesting.
I had the same reaction. I was watching it and I was like, ooh, this is, it's hard to look at this with a critical eye because it's an iconic movie. It mm-hmm. really was iconic, but, it was a little difficult to be, so analytical about it as opposed to just sitting back and watching it brainlessly, which is what would normally happen.
I was really surprised how much stuff I did not remember.
Me too.
Was in the movie.
I had that. Well, and even though we're not there yet, I had actually a bigger reaction with that in T2.
Did you? Okay. And I guess speaking for myself only, because that's what I do.
No, you speak for us all the time. Well, buzzing.
Yes, touche. I found that all the sci-fi elements I remembered, all the cleverness I remembered, were all from T2. The Terminator, and as I did a little research, my mind was not an original thought. In fact, James Cameron, I've got a quote about him and how he created the original idea for the story and what the movie turned into after that initial idea that we can get into if you want. The Terminator is John Carpenter's Halloween. It's like beat for beat a horror movie, a slasher movie.
That's the exact thought I had, is that this isn't really a sci-fi movie. It's as it's constructed, it's a horror movie. And it even had like the John Carpenter, like synth soundtrack.
Exactly.
It was total synth.
Yeah.
I wrote at one point, oh, I can't handle any more synth. But just to start out, for your knowledge, I was watching all the special features.
Please, yes. On my DVD. You are the historian and the archivist, I think.
This movie was, I'm the busybody Michelle.
No. On, you'll find in the wiki that you're the, I think you're the chief, you're the chief historian and also the chief justice.
Yeah, Michelle. So this was a James Cameron fever dream.
Yes, in Italy. When he was working on Piranha 2, The Spawning.
We're lucky this didn't have all kinds of like makeup shops and all this exposition of Italy,
Hannibal.
Yeah, Harris. So,
let's just get into this. So, and this is from, there's a really good article that I'll put in the notes. It's an UpRocks article by Bennett Hawkins, and it's called How James Cameron's Bad Dream Launched One of Sci-Fi's Biggest Franchises. Again, links in the notes. And so James Cameron was actually hired to be the special effects director for Piranha 2, The Spawning. But because the producers were like shady guys, they ended up firing the original director and just making him the actual director of the movie. And they never let him see dailies. He's the director, but they never let him see anything that he shot. So he was really not in a good place. And but he had a little bit of time on his hands. And so here's a quote from James Cameron. My contemporaries were all doing slasher horror movies. John Carpenter was the guy I idolized the most. He made Halloween for $30,000 or something. That was everyone's break-in dream to do a stylish horror movie. It was a very slasher-type film image, and it really was the launching pad for the story. So Cameron ended up having a fever dream about this chrome torso, right? So he couldn't get the image of a chrome torso. So he wrote it, and he pretty much wrote the script for T2. But then they realized they couldn't pull off the special effects of the two Terminators and one with a molten metal skin, metal insides. So he just pared it down and turned it into like a John Carpenter Halloween ripoff. And his own agent didn't like the idea, so he had to find another agent or some kind of business partner to try to get the financing for it. And that's when he hooked up with this lady named Gail Ann Hurd, which she also, I guess, helped finish writing it. But she was basically the one negotiating for distribution and financing. And everybody wanted to buy the idea from him, but they didn't want him to direct it. They actually tried to buy Gail out and just basically say, look, you know, we'll give you a bunch of money, but he can't direct it. You got to lose him. He's a loser. He's a known loser, as future President Trump might say.
So Gail Ann Hurd, by the way, was one of his wives.
Well, later. Yeah. They got married later, like in 1991, I think.
85.
Oh, okay. In 1985, they were married.
85 to 89.
He just marries a different lady from each one of his movies?
Yes.
Yeah, surprisingly, he never married Gina Davis. Anyway, so... But for business reasons, he actually sold Gail the rights to the movie for $1. As long as she promised not to... or that he was the only person to direct it. And so she honored that. And they managed to make this distribution deal with Orion Pictures. But Orion wasn't going to do the financing. The financing was coming from this smaller group called Hemdale Pictures. And the head of Hemdale Pictures was a guy named John Daly. And John Daly was, not super... He didn't really see a lot of potential in the script. He wasn't very enthusiastic about it. So Cameron decided to make him enthusiastic. So he called up his buddy Lance Henriksen that was working on Piranha 2 with him. And so they had a meeting with John Daly. Cameron and Daly had a meeting. And Cameron had never met Lance Henriksen. So Lance Henriksen shows up wearing a leather jacket, motorcycle boots, sunglasses, and smoking a cigarette, and kicked open the door of the office and was announcing he was there for John Daly, which would have been super impressive, except James Cameron hadn't arrived for the meeting yet. So it scared the crap out of the people in the office. So this crazy person was coming to... Anyway, but it actually fulfilled the intended purpose, and they got their $6 million budget.
Wow.
Which turned into, what, like $80 million at box office? But yeah, Cameron says himself, this is just a slasher movie. You know, the movie he really wanted to make was T2. And, you know, we'll talk about that next time. But T2 is a completely different kind of movie.
It is.
But not to say that I didn't enjoy The Terminator. I like The Terminator a great deal. And they did great casting. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger was fantastic as a robot.
No.
You don't think so?
No, sorry.
Okay.
No, he looked great. I mean, he especially back then when he was so bulky, he had the body that looked sort of inhuman, like looked like a big, horrible machine, you know, with a layer of skin stretched over
it. Just a big lumbering mass of mess.
Yeah, but what really struck me watching this movie is what a terrible job he did. He did okay, like with the limited number of lines that he had, but the physicality he had in this movie, being the Terminator, was awful. I mean, like, he would just kind of jump into rooms and spray the gun around like a little kid. You know, not very robot-like, like in later movies and television shows. And even he did a much better job in T2. And T3, you know, of acting more like a robotic person.
Well, he probably had a dozen or more movies under his belt by T2, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was really surprised how terrible he was.
Excellent. See, I thought it was a perfect choice. You know, I thought it was...
He looked great. I mean, he looked great. And because his English wasn't great, he sounded like a robot when he spoke. I mean, this may be the only time I ever say that he was actually way better when he was speaking than when he was just doing physical stunts.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well,
But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, you won't be able to see this on the podcast, but he would jump into a room with a gun and be like,
it's like flailing around madly.
Yeah. I mean, just like no sort of killer efficiency. It was silly.
I wonder if that was a product of the times. I mean, I'm not trying to excuse it necessarily, but I'm curious.
It might have been, because I never noticed it before this time.
Yeah.
I was like, what is he doing?
Well, shall we talk about plagiarism, or shall we just dive into the movie?
Oh, are you saying this was plagiarized?
Well, I'm not saying it, but Orion Pictures had a settlement with Harlan Ellison, who claimed that the film was plagiarized from two different Outer Limits episodes and a book, a short story called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. It pretty much has all of the elements in those three things. And Cameron was pissed that Orion paid out to Ellison about it. And Ellison gets a writing credit on it. But, or inspired by credit.
how much was the payout?
They didn't disclose it, but it was enough to make Ellison go away. And, you know, they just made a ton of money, so I'm sure...
Yeah, I was going to say, James Cameron can cry all the way to the bank.
Well, it's not Cameron's last brush with plagiarism either. He's pretty much been accused of plagiarism his entire career for stories.
Well, but, if you're...
Yeah,
I mean,
did you know that there really was a boat called the Titanic? I mean, it's ridiculous.
So, okay. To start The Terminator, this horror movie, we have a little title card and some... just to interrupt, a tangent from the get-go. This movie did not lack for special effects. It didn't have the ability to make the special effects that was possible by T2. You know, T2 was really, like, amazing in its special effects. But they spared... No technique in this movie. This had every bit of special effects you could do. They had lots of a rear projection, and they had claymation, and they had puppets, and they had straight up animation.
And it was bad.
And they had lots of prosthetic effects, which
and it was bad.
Yeah, it was kind of bad.
Yeah, it was dated. I mean, it was great at the time, and again, in high school. Watching it on a little TV from a VHS, probably a VHS copy. It didn't matter in those days, but watching it on my big screen Blu-ray, I was like, ooh, this is dated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And it's full of quippy lines,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of great little...
And I didn't recognize him, but did you realize who the punk leader was? The guy who got his clothes taken away?
Bill Paxton.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's hilarious. So.
Nice night for a walk, eh?
Nice night for a walk.
Wash day tomorrow. Nothing clean, right?
Nothing clean, right?
Hey, I think this guy's a couple cans short of a six-pack.
Your clothes. Give them to me. Now.
Fuck you, asshole!
Anyway, so we have a title card that reads that the machines rose from the ashes of the nuclear fire. Their war to exterminate mankind had raged for decades, but the final battle would not be fought in the future. It would be fought here. In our present. Tonight. And so, May 12th, 1984... We have two beings from the year 2029 that show up in Los Angeles. One is Arnold Schwarzenegger playing a Terminator T-800 Model 101. And the other is a guy named Kyle Reese, played by Michael Biehn.
Biehn!
And we would know Michael Biehn from Aliens, The Abyss, and The Rock. And of course, we know Arnold Schwarzenegger from everywhere. And... the Terminator is a cyborg assassin programmed to kill a young woman named Sarah Connor, played by Linda Hamilton. Now, these guys show up naked, and so they have to go get clothes. And the Terminator meets Bill Paxton and his gang, and he dispatches them pretty quickly. And then he goes to the gun shop and has an interesting conversation. Again, very quippy, very quotable conversation with the gun shop owner.
Fourth gauge autoloader.
That's Italian. You can go pump or auto.
The 45 long slide with laser sighting.
These are brand new. We just got them in. That's a good gun. You just touch the trigger, the beam comes on, and you put the red dot where you want the bullet to go. You can't miss. Anything else?
Phased plasma rifle in the 40-watt range.
Hey, just what you see, pal.
Uzi 9mm.
You know your weapons, buddy. Any one of these is ideal for home defense. So, which'll it be?
All.
I may close early today. There's a 15-day wait on handguns, but the rifles you can take right now. You can't do that.
Keep an eye out for that gun shop owner. I think there is an episode late in season 2 of the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which parallels that scene, and I think it might be the same gun shop owner.
Oh, sweet. That would be very interesting. And again, this is a straight up horror movie. Like, this isn't played for laughs. There's no like sleight of hand, or like you said, it's not even like an efficient assassin kind of thing. He's less an assassin than just a brute force instrument, a sledgehammer to go and take out people, because that's what he does. And he ends up going to kill two women named Sarah Connor before he gets to the right one. And that's the clever, again, much like Halloween, he's after this one person, but there's a little bit of collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was delighted, only because I can put in sound effects and theme songs, but I was delighted in the real Sarah Connor, the Linda Hamilton, her roommate, Ginger, was Bess Mata, or I'm sorry, yes, Bess Mata of 20-minute workout fame.
Oh my god.
That's amazing.
Yep.
And reach behind your foot, we'll stretch it back. And reach, reach. Tummy's tight. Keep breathing. Four more. Three more. Two more, hands are down, lunging left for eight counts. We've got the eight, seven, six, and five. Four, three, keep it low to the right. Four, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, then take it back for four as we hold it four. Three.
And she loved her Walkman.
Oh, she loved her Walkman, yeah.
And three more. And two more. And one more.
Did I ever force upon you the, again, like 1998 English pop tune Gym and Tonic, where it was like electronica backing Jane Fonda workout video lyrics?
Oh my god.
No.
I will have to insert that here. It's pretty great.
A little more than hip distance apart. Your stomach pulled in, your weight slightly forward. Keep in that posture and reach. Two, three, two, three, two, three, four. Back. Two, three, two, three, two, three, four. Reach. Two, three, two, three, two, three, four. Back. Two, three, two, three, two, three, four.
I have no words for that.
Inexplicable, really.
Yeah, so poor Ginger and her partner, her very single-minded phone perv partner, which is, again, a cute scene.
Well, it was mullets or us, so.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, it was. This was definitely 80s. I was trying to explain Patrick Nagel to our mother the other day, because I knew she would recognize it. I never got a chance to show her a picture of a Nagel painting, but I was trying to like sum it up in just a few words, and all I could come up with is the
naked woman on a zebra.
No, that's Olivia.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, it's different. No, Nagel was
it's all the same.
No, I described it as the backup singers from the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love video, with short hair and like neon squiggles behind them as a painting, like a single woman, but I don't think ever nude,
wearing shirts with very angular lines.
Yes, angular lines, and sometimes like workout type shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a definitely thing. There's a cartoon on the television that has that kind of theme. Are you familiar with
what? Thundercats.
No. No, I mean a modern day one. Like the equivalent of Archer, but it's like seriously like Patrick Nagel design. I'll have to look it up. Anyway. Again, I have 12 pages of notes, but nothing that includes this because we didn't realize we're going on a Nagel tangent.
You're driving the bus, buddy.
Yeah, right into the ground.
Moonbeam City. Soaked in neon, drenched in murder. Coated in a hot layer of thick sex. Oh, and some really excellent restaurants.
Welcome to a restaurant. May I take your statement?
From this depraved recipe is born a felony-infested parfait that is my home. It's a town I love. It's a town that makes me hard on crime. Dazzle Novak, Moonbeam City Police.
Today we take back the streets of Moonbeam City.
Can we stop by the ice cream place on the way back? I think I left my gun there.
In fact, I know I did.
Sex.
I knew you couldn't do it 5 times in a row.
Violence. And some spicy justice. Pastels.
Trying on outfits, do-do-do.
Rob Lowe.
I've got more important things to do than saving lives.
Elizabeth Banks.
Time to wake the snake. Ow!
Kate Mara.
This man is a fee man.
I'm sorry I lied.
Will Forte.
He shoots! He scores!
Stop it! You're ruining the crime scene.
It's a crime scene. It was already ruined.
I am a police officer. More drugs are coming.
Eat chimes, bitch.
Yeah. I like poop in my mouth. What's wrong with me?
Get your skanks out of my office.
Hey, they have names, probably.
Moonbeam City. New series September 16th.
Who wants some?
On Comedy Central.
May God help us all.
So yeah, so Kyle shows up, and Kyle's got to get clothes too. And he is, as it turns out, not a robot, but we'll find that out a little bit later. And he ends up saving Sarah from the Terminator's attack. And they end up having a car chase where the Terminator steals a police car.
Yeah, but let's back up a little bit. Okay. So Reese shows up and the police are after him. Why?
Because he's molesting a homeless man.
Yeah, and he ran.
He wasn't molesting a homeless man. The police were already looking for somebody.
I think they just happened upon the alley to see him standing over a homeless dude who was wearing no pants.
Exactly. And screaming, "Hey, he stole my pants."
Yeah.
And there must have been some sort of report of the big flashing light when they arrived, right? I mean, I would think that would alert the local constabulary.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was a bunch of Keystone cops anyway. It didn't really matter.
Oh, yeah, no. All the cops in this movie are fairly disposable, as it turns out. So then we get a little bit of Kyle provides exposition. And, yeah, Michael Biehn isn't exactly the best actor in this either. Really, actually, none of them are super great.
Linda Hamilton's performance is terrible.
Michael Biehn was great, though. He was so committed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely he was committed.
He was in it to win it. And, you know, and he had the iconic line, "Come with me if you want to live," which I think is repeated in every Terminator property.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, it's a great line. But, yeah. So, you know, Linda Hamilton starts out as, you know, a kind of a... I mean, she's not fierce at all. Like, in Terminator 2, she is full-on fierce and batshit crazy. But in this movie, she's just confused, which actually kind of works for the story because it would be a confusing situation.
It works for the overall, like, the multimedia property story arc of Sarah Connor. I mean, starting out as sort of the hapless waitress who doesn't know what's going on and can't fathom that her life is now changing forever to what we see in Terminator 2. They did a really good job connecting the dots there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and continuing her story in a really believable manner.
Yep, I agree.
Even by the end of this movie, I mean, she'd turned a corner.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was really well done. I thought it was definitely. I hate to say that it was more intellectual than Halloween, because Halloween still has some stuff to recommend it. But unfortunately, the follow-up to the Halloween movies wasn't anything like the follow-up to this. I mean, it's kind of a shame that John Carpenter, he made some good movies after this, but The Thing, which, you know, is one of my favorite horror movies, if not my favorite horror movie. But that was such a bomb that... he couldn't continue. He couldn't be a James Cameron. James Cameron turns out to be king of the world. And John Carpenter is, still kind of floating around the edges.
But he made Prince of Darkness.
He did indeed. He made They Live. He made Vampires. I just recently watched Vampires with James Woods. Yeah.
Sorry.
Let me tell you, James Woods is James Woods and up the place in that movie. It's not a compliment.
No, it's not.
So, anyway, yeah. So, Kyle explains, during the chase scenes, basically, explains all the exposition about how in the future, artificial intelligence defense network kind of Star Wars thing called Skynet becomes self-aware, and there's a nuclear holocaust caused by the machines, and he was born after this holocaust, but he was sent back in time to protect the mother of the leader of the rebellion, because the rebellion had pretty much defeated Skynet. So the only way Skynet could win was to send a Terminator back in time. And that's John Connor, was leader of the rebellion in 2029. And so John Connor, in turn, sends Kyle Reese back to protect his own mother. And of course, we learn later on that, spoiler, that Kyle Reese is also John's father, and he would have known that. So that's a kind of interesting thing.
Yeah, it introduces a weird timeline circle do-loop that is explored in later Terminator properties.
Yeah, and, we've already had issues with... Time travel movies inherently have problems, and this is no exception. But anyway, it doesn't matter, because things are going at a fair clip, so this doesn't give you a lot of time to sit and think about things too much, I don't think. But yeah, so Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor, is sort of confused and baffled by all this, but since the robot guy keeps showing up and shooting stuff at them, she's convinced at least that Kyle Reese is the guy to follow.
Well, I think after she sees the destruction, even after trusting certain people, that Reese seems to be the, he seems to be the one who isn't getting her into as much trouble and isn't causing just wanton death and destruction.
Oh yeah, no, he's fulfilling that the promise he made that to come with him when she'd live. And they end up getting into a big car chase. And the cars crash, and they are caught by the police. And I think the police is my favorite part of this movie, just because everybody gets to ham it up a little bit. Like, I love Dr. Silberman, Earl Bowen. He is great. He, by the way, has 254 acting credits, including Santa Barbara.
Yes.
And the police officers are Lieutenant Traxler, played by Paul Winfield, from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Khan!
And Mars Attacks and Cliffhanger.
Attack.
Sergeant Vukovic, played by Lance Henriksen, from Millennium, Aliens, Pumpkinhead, The Quick and the Dead, and a million horror movies. Lance Henriksen is the man.
Was Paul Winfield in Fairy Tale Theater as like the mirror on the wall?
He was definitely, he was in a series where he played mirror on the wall, where he was the mirror.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I'm thinking of.
There was an entire story arc, by the way, that was entirely in deleted scenes of Lieutenant Traxler, which explains a lot more of the movie, because you miss some of what happens doesn't make sense because of what they've cut out. Because there's a story arc where Traxler is explaining his skepticism and how he kind of thinks that Sarah might not be insane, that she may actually be telling the truth, that she may actually be onto something, and that Reese may actually be from the future. And then there's another scene where he actually tells Reese to take Sarah and go in the police station shootout. He actually gives them a blessing and sends them on their way. And that's a couple of the deleted scenes, but there were a whole bunch of scenes with him in it.
Well, he's a name brand actor. I mean, he's done all sorts of fun stuff.
And there's other deleted scenes too. There's a scene where she calls her mom and tells her mom to escape and go to the cabin and hide. So because that's alluded to later, but you never in the movie you never see where it happens, and they cut that scene out. And then there's a whole scene where Sarah looks up Cyberdyne in the phone book. And she advocates bombing the factory, and Reese is like, no, we can't do that.
Interesting.
By the way, the TV series is called The Charmings, and he was Mirror Mirror, and it starred Christopher Rich as Eric Charming, Judy Parfitt as Queen Lillian White, let's see, Paul Winfield as The Mirror, Carol Houston as Snow White Charming. Let's see, who else?
This sounds really familiar.
Back in the days when there were only three choices.
Exactly, and they had, I think Jenny Lewis was in one episode of that. Oh, the tagline to The Charmings? From the people who brought you poison apples and frogs.
Yeah. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, a 30-minute comedy, and it won an Emmy for Outstanding Lighting Direction Electronic for a Comedy Series.
Well deserved, I'm sure.
Yes. Absolutely. So, okay.
All right. I want to hear more about deleted scenes now.
Yeah, sorry. Well, should we get to the rest of the plot real quick? Because it still won't take very long. I mean, the plot is pretty simple.
Yeah.
Although, straight up, the Terminator, again, T2 has fun with this, but in this movie, the Terminator is just a straight-up evil bad guy, unstoppable monster.
Yeah, he's a unitasker.
Yeah. Well, it turns out he's not unstoppable, much like the train in that movie. But, so they end up at the police station where they find out whether Kyle Reese is crazy or she's crazy or whatever, and we have Traxler and Vukovic kind of, again, I can see where some other scenes could make their banter be more explainable, but I just thought they had a good chemistry between them. And then the Terminator shows up claiming to be a friend of Sarah Connor.
Well, there was a great, great scene with Michael Biehn when he's being interviewed by the doctor, where he's going full on batshit talking about the future. And that's really great. And that scene is paralleled in T2 and also in the TV show with Sarah Connor being the one who's interviewed. So that was another fun thing to see, is like how early they're setting these things up for the rest of the franchise that they probably didn't even know about yet.
Yeah, or they just had these like fun little ideas that they could expand on later. Because I guess I can't be sure, but it seems like this wouldn't be something that James Cameron would be, expecting to be his Star Wars. Or maybe he did. I don't know how these guys thought. I mean, apparently the lore is that George Lucas had this whole, serial idea in the beginning from Star Wars. And I'm getting a head shake, which is not great radio from Brother Jay.
I was waiting for you to stop flapping your gums to say something.
No, you interrupt. So I shake my head. That's what you do.
I don't always interrupt. I try not to interrupt.
No. I'm not saying that you do that. I'm saying this is how you
shut
do
up.
That.
No. No. I just
move.
I don't believe that Lucas had. I don't believe that. I think that's bullshit. I don't think he had everything planned out. If he had it planned out, he'd have written it better.
Well, again,
that's my judgment right there. Well, bang the gavel. I'm out. Mic drop.
Boom. The George Lucas's talent were not really either direction or writing as much as world building. Does that make any sense at all, or does it excuse anything for anybody?
Nope. Bad is bad.
It both makes sense. It's a very profound observation, but no, it does not excuse anything.
Okay. So, what? Profundity gives me nothing in this place. So anyway, so the Terminator, after some fun lines about "I'll be back," which is kind of, you know, it's funny, for as much as it got said, and as much as it was, I'm sure, like a monologue line for Johnny Carson for years, it wasn't like super important in the plot or anything.
No, it was a throwaway line.
But yeah, then the Terminator comes and he flat out fucks up this little police station. It is just like mass murder.
Yeah, there were two like this like really, you know, prototypical Terminator moments in the movie, and one of them was him just demolishing the police station and murdering everybody. And then the later one was when he has his skin burned away. But
the funny thing about this, though, I don't know if you can see, which my notepad.
Oh, you have body count.
Yep.
But you know that there had to be more police officers that were killed in that shootout at the police station, don't you think?
Yeah, but that's all you saw. Okay. You know, I accumulated 20 dead bodies.
Awesome. Yeah. So Sarah and Kyle escape and, they spend the night under the bridge, and they seek refuge in a motel where they also assemble pipe bombs.
Cue the Red Hot Chili Peppers, by the way.
Yes, exactly. So that's where they have this the most like 80s kind of uncomfortable making falling in love making scene.
With a deleted scene of her tickling him, and he's never been tickled before.
Oh, I'm glad that was deleted, because that would have made it even more uncomfortable.
Oh, man, that tickles.
Wait, he'd never been anything before, according to him. So, bravo for his first time. I thought, stellar work.
Well, he knocks her up first time out of the gate, too.
Yeah.
A mission accomplished. So, and then he really realizes, or he admits to her that that John Connor gave him a picture and he fell in love with that picture.
Wait, that was before the sex.
Yeah. Well, still, yeah, that's what led to the sex, but, which is, you know, it's a pretty bold move, really. It's like, I've loved you forever. I've had your picture forever.
He traveled across time for her.
Yes. Yes. Your son set me up to make him in you.
Yeah, it's the worst thing you've ever said.
Well, it's just a little weird. So later that night, after their sweet, sweet love, the Terminator tracks them down, and they escape in a pickup. And Kyle is throwing pipe bombs at the Terminator.
Yeah, so, sort of interspersed in the story is there are some, I guess they're flashbacks. They're flashbacks for Kyle.
Flash forwards for us.
Yeah, they're shots of the future war. There was one time when he first got there and he fell asleep in a car and had a dream. And then there was another when he was describing it to Sarah. I had no memory of all of those future scenes. Like, they seemed really fresh to me when I was watching the movie this time. It made me wonder if I had some weird addition that I'd never seen before, but nope. Apparently, I just blocked them all out of my memory because they were kind of hard to watch, but I was really surprised how much time they actually spent in the future in this movie.
They were trying to give a good deal of story to give Bree some depth.
Oh, no. And I mean, kudos to the set director who got to go to the Skulls R Us store. And litter the future with skulls on the ground.
He would have just had to go to your apartment in 1990.
It's true, yeah. Oh, that would have been my dream. Oh, well. Someday I'll have a skull room again. Yeah, so Arnold is on a motorcycle and getting pipe bombs thrown at him. And again, it's all very 80s action.
We haven't even mentioned how much of this movie Arnold has spent without without eyebrows. They got burned away pretty early.
Yeah, well, and I thought it was clever that, you know, when he gets injured in his eye area, that he just puts on those the gargoyle sunglasses. Very, very distinctive. I think they are gargoyles, right?
Yeah, and that was so that they could stop showing us that awful prosthetic head.
Yeah, the prosthetic head was bad. It was really, really... It was... Yeah, it was bad. It was like... Actually, do you remember the movie Escape from Alcatraz? Clint Eastwood plays one of the four guys that escaped from Alcatraz.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to build papier-mâché heads to fool the guards.
I do remember that.
Yeah, the papier-mâché heads in Escape from Alcatraz were better quality than the scene where Arnold... is playing with his eye.
I thought the scene where he was playing with his eye actually looked like he was wearing a Michael Myers mask.
Exactly. So, yeah, so they end up, let's see, the Terminator. So Sarah manages to knock the Terminator off of his motorcycle, but she ends up losing control of the pickup. And again, it's car accidents. This is a pretty serious car accident they have, but luckily... You know, she was mostly okay.
And Kyle's been shot at this point.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Kyle is wounded, and he gets more wounded in the car accident. And the Terminator gets up and gets run over by a gasoline tanker truck, which is actually pretty great. For what they had to work with, I thought it was pretty well done.
Yep.
And the Terminator, you know, the driver gets out of the truck, and the Terminator kills him, and then... basically tells the other guy to get out of the truck.
Get out.
Yeah, which he does, because he's no dumb.
Comes up in later movies, by the way.
Yeah, so the Terminator resumes the chase in this fuel truck, and...
He's now driving a giant bomb.
Yes, and they are on foot. Sarah and Kyle are on foot. But Kyle manages to put a pipe bomb in the truck's fuel trailer... and he takes shelter in a dumpster, and so the Terminator, after the truck explodes, the Terminator emerges from the burning truck and collapses, seemingly destroyed.
On fire,
and with his clothes and flesh burned away. And then he rises up from the ashes, and he is full on, like, stop motion at this point. And pursues them into a nearby and conveniently placed factory.
Which looked like they were setting up a Ninja Warrior course.
Yes, exactly. Oh, are you kidding? This was this proto Ninja Warrior course right here.
And I know we've been kind of ragging on how dated the special effects looked. And the stop motion, you know, metal Terminator doesn't hold up as well. But I thought the close-ups of, like, the torso and the head actually still held up really well. Those looked really good.
You mean the metal shots and the feet on the ground and...
Yeah, and in the actual face of the Terminator. Like, anytime they could zoom in so that he wasn't walking around, I thought those effects still looked really good.
And you know, terror-inducing.
30 years later.
They're scary. I mean, they were scary pictures. It's imagery. I mean, some of it's still scary to watch. Singularly when you take it apart.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I dig all the special effects. Even, again, it was really easy to see the projected images when shit is on fire and Linda Hamill's standing in front of all of it. You know, it's obviously shot on, like, in front of a green screen or whatever. But still, it was still fun to see all that.
Well, for God's sakes, the end of the movie, she drives into a matte painting.
It's true. Yeah.
But it was beautiful.
It was a great matte painting. Also, yeah, well, we'll get there when we get there. But, yeah, this one part made me so happy to hear a certain line being said. Now it's, like, full on... final chase scene in the factory, and the Kyle activates the machinery in the factory, and it's just a full-on fight, like 2-on-1.
Yeah, and Sarah has the moment that reminded me of the Gina Davis movie where her kid had to yell at her to get up. Yes. She had to do the same thing to Reese, to yell at him to get up.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is where she grows the testicles and tells him, get up, soldier. So she's, like, taking charge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the Terminator is hard to kill. That's kind of a recurring theme in the series. We have this final fight scene in the factory, and there's a hydraulic press that finally crushes and deactivates the Terminator after lots of...
Well, after Kyle blows up the Terminator with the last pipe bomb.
Yes.
Blows up the Terminator and himself.
Yes. Yeah, because at the very end, Terminator is one-armed and legless.
Yeah, but still crawling towards Sarah to kill her.
Yeah, which is a super scary image.
That's plenty terrifying.
Yeah. But Sarah isn't putting
and
up
looked
with this
great.
Shit. Yeah.
She just happened to know that that was a big press and that she could just start it with the push of a button.
Yeah. Well, she's learned on her feet now. She's no dummy anymore. I'm no waitress. She's out of the weeds, baby. She's going to lead a revolution. Or she's going to create the person who leads the revolution. She's going to teach the person who leads the revolution.
She's going to birth the revolution leader.
She is. She's Che Guevara's mama. Mama Guevara. No. Okay.
Sorry, I am not nodding.
Okay. So several months later, a pregnant Sarah is traveling through Mexico, and she is narrating audio tapes on the way as a legacy project. This is like pre-podcast. And she's talking, musing to herself on the recording about how much she's going to tell John, who is presumably the person who's going to be listening to these tapes. And she stops at a gas station, and a small boy with a Polaroid camera takes a photograph, and then he's a little grifter kid, so he's going to get money from her for taking the picture. And, he's in the cahoots with the guy who runs the gas station, right? It's the old Polaroid picture scam. But as we find out, this is where the picture that Kyle Reese falls in love with comes from. And but the last lines of the movie are the little boy says something in Spanish to the gas station attendant. And Sarah Connor's like, well, what did he just say? And the gas station attendant says, he said, there's a storm coming. And Sarah Connor sighs and says, I know. So, the likes of which you've never seen, and not one of you was prepared for it.
Not a one of you.
Not a one of you. Sorry.
Not a one of you.
So, yeah, so that's the Terminator.
Another deleted scene, by the way, at the end in the factory. One of the factory owners is there pulling parts out of the press. It turns out that the factory is the Cyberdyne factory.
So they were making Terminator parts?
No. He pulled the Terminator parts out of the press.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, that's how they got.
And so that factory turns out
the technology.
Yeah, the factory they were at was the Cyberdyne factory. And the dude tells one of the lab guys to take the sophisticated chips they found up to the research and development lab so they can examine it.
Wow. That was, So maybe there was a bigger thing in mind. Maybe he was just going to go for that T2 script.
Well, I'm certainly the foundation was there. Why it was deleted, I don't know. It would have been a great scene. I mean, it was a great scene, but just maybe for time, I don't know. Well, this wasn't a really long movie, though. Certainly, it was a lot shorter than T2.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to... spoiler for next week. T2 is a vastly better movie six different levels.
Well, I have like a page of notes from Terminator and then a page of extra stuff from Terminator. Terminator 2, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages of notes.
Oh, yeah. No, T2 is going to be fun to talk about. But, yeah, this lays the groundwork for it. It's pretty great.
And on the pilot of Sarah Connor Chronicles, I already have a page of notes. So, although some Some of it's my annoyance.
Yeah, I had to be careful because I didn't want to be taking too many notes and like, because I found myself getting distracted from the actual movie and, or from the TV show. And although it's one thing, I played the, have you heard the United Nations horror clip, Jason?
No, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, because...
I need to, I just...
No, I'm gonna put it in this episode. If you want to wait, we'll just listen to it. I'm gonna put the whole thing in at the end because it's very interesting. But yeah, they mentioned how we talk about sitcoms at some point. Like, okay, we've never talked about a sitcom.
I bet we have.
Well, I don't think so. Let me take a quick break here before we.
That's my bush.
Yeah, I'm sure we've mentioned a sitcom or two.
Yeah, I like some sitcoms. I like smart sitcoms. I can't handle the stupid ones. Same reason I can't handle stupid comedy movies. They have to be smart comedy. Unless it's something so stupid that it's just stupid without a premise, like Jackass. Jackass is fine, but there's no premise.
What's an example of a dumb comedy movie that you can't stand? Like, are you like an Anchorman guy?
And not really. I didn't really dig Anchorman. I know that'll turn a lot of people off. Like Joe Dirt, I didn't think was funny. A lot of people thought that was funny. I didn't think it was funny. It just was so cliched. Other comedies that are kind of patently just stupid, like the American Pie movies, I didn't think were funny. They just were kind of dumb funny. It's like you go, I mean, there was a couple great lines, but you just, there's only, it has to be. You got to grow some comedy. It just can't be, I don't know, awful, awful. But again, like Borat, I thought Borat was genius.
Yeah, Borat got old pretty quickly, I thought, though.
Well, again, it doesn't hold up on rewatch, but the first time you watch it, it's hilariously funny.
I agree. I love Borat. I haven't watched it more than twice, I don't think. I love the Ali G show.
The naked fight scene in Borat was way funnier than the naked fight scene in Eastern Promises.
That is true. Do you want to hear the 6 degrees?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Banana! Stupid. I know, it's stupid. I'm going to say it every time. It just makes me laugh.
It makes me laugh.
Okay.
Because I'm 12.
So... The Terminator, starring Linda Hamilton. Who starred in 1986's Black Moon Rising with Robert Vaughn. Who was in Superman 3 and 4 with Robert Beatty, who was Dr. Ralph Halverson in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Ta-da! Very nice.
Okay, what else did I have? Oh, Jason sent a link from screencrush.com that I'll put in the notes that talks about Arnold Schwarzenegger is a serious auteur and it's time everyone acknowledged it.
Yeah, that's actually recommended. That was a link given to me from one of my pals who has a cable access show that reviews movies. And so he was like, hey, you have a podcast. And he asked me what we were reviewing. And I told him, and he's like, oh, you got to check this link out. So I watched it and I was like, interesting. And then that's how I shared it with you.
Yeah, no, there's very consistent themes in Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, more than you would think if he didn't have some sort of creative control over the projects he picks.
Yeah.
So
I thought it was a good analysis.
Yeah. So if you want to hear about auteur theory with actors or acteur, which people are trying to shove together, which doesn't make sense. Did you get a chance to see it, Drew?
Oh, yeah. I watched it. It was interesting. I think there are some things that were a bit of a stretch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sort of. Yeah, if you have a premise, you can go find evidence for that premise, depending on how you look at things and interpret things. But it made me realize how many Arnold movies I not only have not seen, amazingly, But just how many I love and want to watch again. Like anytime they showed a clip from Predator or Total Recall, which are such silly, silly movies, I was like, I love those movies.
Oh, or Commando?
So which ones?
True Lies?
Yeah, which ones haven't you seen, Drew?
I've not seen Junior. I have not seen Kindergarten Cop. I have not seen The Last Action Hero.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either, or Kindergarten Cop, or Junior, or The Sixth Day.
Oh, I've seen The Sixth Day.
I've seen, yeah. I wish I had.
I remember seeing End of Days, I think, in Missouri, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a dark movie.
It is a very dark movie.
And then there's The Eraser.
Yeah, I never saw The Eraser.
Oh, I really like The Eraser, or I remember liking The Eraser.
Oh, then it has to go on the calendar.
I think it is on the calendar.
Okay, cool.
So. I think you're right. I think it is.
I'm pretty sure I put it on there. Because I rather like that movie. So.
Yeah, cool. Well, okay, so anything more on The Terminator? I know we're going to talk Terminator for several more weeks in a row. I'm going to try to intersperse some of those movies in the can as we go along. Just so people don't get Terminator weary.
All right, you're on notice, Brother Jay. You better go watch Curse of the Golden Flower.
Which turns out wasn't as hard to connect to 2001 A Space Odyssey as I feared.
Well, what is Curse of the Golden Flower about?
It's about an empress in ancient China who is not extremely happy with her domestic situation and decides to do something about it.
Is this a horror movie?
No, it's a very artsy. Well, artsy maybe is a strong word. It's a very lavish Hong Kong production, I think. If not Hong Kong, then mainland China production.
Yeah, no, I think it's Chinese. Yeah.
It's super stylish, and it's a little bit long. I mean, I was frankly not super looking forward to it, but it turns out it's well-paced and well-acted, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's sort of high melodrama mixed with bananas action.
That is the way to give a succinct, not halfway.
But final thoughts about Terminator for me. I love this movie. It's still really enjoyable to watch. It wasn't quite what I remembered, but being so familiar with the sort of franchise property as it's evolved, it's really interesting to see the foundation and to see how much really substance there is, especially for a science fiction movie that is actually just a horror movie.
Yeah, I agree with you. Although the synth got to me after a while, it really started to get on my nerves.
Oh, it made me laugh every time because it was such a John Carpenter ripoff.
So well, terrible.
It wasn't just John Carpenter, because look at RoboCop. That was all like synth. I mean, it was, to me, it brought me back to the 80s. That's what the synth did. Mm-hmm.
It really is a trope of the 80s, but it also makes you wonder if this was just an attempt to avoid any kind of royalty structure by not having actual, you know, real music. Not that it wasn't real music, but I'm just saying you didn't have to pay rights for it.
Well, you certainly didn't have to hire an orchestra to do
right. Like, well, you didn't have to pay any kind of fees.
Oh, no, somebody got paid for doing music on this.
Right, but you don't have to pay, like, licensing ASCAP or any of that stuff. You know, you paid somebody in the musician's guild to create it, but, you know, you're not having to pay artists or labels. Yeah. You know, you don't have to pay Sony to put it in your soundtrack.
That's true, or work on it with your alleged rapist.
What a timely Kesha reference, yes. And also free Michael Biehn. Where is he?
Yeah, I don't know.
Get him. I mean, granted, if I were him, I would have retired after Tombstone 2, but he needs to get out there, get in some more mainstream movies. He's great. I enjoy him. I enjoy him every time he's on the screen.
Michael Biehn, if you're listening, we'd love to do an interview with you. You can phone in, you can Skype in, you know, we'll make it work. We can't fly you here. Although, if you haven't even in the Portland area, I think Jason will let you share the couch and podcast with him.
What?
So, Michael Biehn, if you're listening.
That's a yes.
Yeah, bring friends.
Wait a minute. No. he's actually doing... Wow. post-production of Shadow, post-production, pre-production of Killer Weekend, completed the Night Visitor 2 Heather story.
Hold on. Is that like a Skinemax movie or a horror movie?
I have no idea.
The Night Visitor 2 Heather story?
I'm just reading the title. Untitled Neil Blomkamp Alien Project.
Oh, well, that is either going to be good or horrible.
He was in The Dark Forest in 2014.
I understand Chappie wasn't very good, but I love District 9.
Oh, I like District 9.
Dark Forest, is that the one, the little independent movie that he, I think, wrote and directed?
I'm not sure. Let me look. District 9 was great, but cringe. Some of it had some cringe-inducingly bad parts that made me, I couldn't watch.
I don't think District 9 really holds up on a rewatch. I loved it the first time I saw it.
Huh. Well, I'll have to... maybe not. Maybe it's slow. At this point, I have nothing to watch except for Terminator movies for another week or so. So, are we on to the further segments?
Yeah.
Like, is it me or is it Hereditary?
Yeah. I have... If we're there, I have another... not very satisfying update, but it might be the final one.
Okay, hold on just a second here. The Night Visitor 2 Heather's Story, 2016. The Night Visitor 2 Heather's Story runs parallel to the original Night Visitor, telling the story of Heather, a special young girl who must protect her family and the planet from the same other earthly being. That sequel delves deeper into the mysteries that plague the Stevens family and their son Ricky with the help of psychic and medium Daniel.
Is Michael Biehn Daniel?
No, Michael Biehn is... He's Agent Walker. Heather is Caitlin Carmichael, known for... She was Alma on Doc McStuffins. and she was in the remake of Martyrs.
Ugh. Speaking of movies with night in their title, have either of you seen a preview for Midnight Special?
Oh, is that the one where, is that the Dwayne Allman movie?
No. It is the next movie written and directed by Jeff Nichols, the dude who did Take Shelter and Mud. And it's got Adam Driver in it, and of course Michael Shannon in it. And it looks really interesting.
Huh, interesting.
Kirsten Dunst. Sam Shepard.
Joel Edgerton.
Yes. From, I think, our first brother-themed movie that we talked about on the podcast.
Indeed. A father and son go on the run after the dad learns his child possesses special powers. Tagline, he's not like us.
You should check out the preview for it. It looks good.
Okay, so... unsatisfying medical news.
Ba-da-da!
Yeah, you need to have a stinger for that.
I'm just going to do that every time my doctor calls me on the phone. So I've been on my my corticosteroids for, I guess, a week and a half now, and feeling fine. Actually, tried to play racquetball yesterday for the first time in about a month, and it went okay for about a game and a half, and then my legs just died. Not in a painful way. They're just tired and dead. So that was actually good. Late last week, my doctor actually called me to check up on me and see how things are going and talk about how the medication was working. The fun part of the conversation was he told me he talked to a vascular specialist about my case. The good news was that the specialist agreed that the course of action he had me on was probably the best course of action. As far as like a diagnosis, don't really know what it is, but, it happens sometimes. He said it's not a rare thing. But it's also not very common. And, like a suite of symptoms like this, might show up after like getting over a virus or something similar. So I had to like go back in my memory and, ask my wife what was going on around the time before I had the onset of the symptoms. And, both of our recollections was that our entire household was really sick right beforehand. You know, the kids had like that dry barking seal cough for a couple weeks, and we all kind of had colds around the time in early January. And it seemed to be just after everybody got over that's when the weird stuff in my leg started.
Well, that would be good news.
You had a trip sometime in there too, right? You went to Hawaii.
That was back in October.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and you've been tested. They test you for Lyme disease.
No.
Is there a reliable test?
Well, I was tested for autoimmune stuff in general.
Yeah, because isn't Lyme one of those things that they kind of test everything else and then they determine it might be it? I mean, unless you have unless you found a tick on your body that you know has been there for longer than 36 hours, is there one blood test?
No, I don't know.
I've never found a tick on my body.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that if you did, you probably wouldn't have it because it has to be on your body for quite a while. But I guess, like, Lyme can stay dormant for quite a while, like years, I think, without symptoms. So, and yet, you know, again, I think it's treatable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if it's just a virus, then a miscellaneous virus will probably just go away, right?
It takes time for your body to mount a defense, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, so that's my hope.
And if your immune system's weakened because you've been sick, then it just takes that much longer.
Or maybe because you're on corticosteroids, which weaken your immune system.
Depress your immune system, yeah.
And also prevent you from ever getting a good night's sleep, as it turns out.
Yes, that's true. Well, are you taking them in the morning, I assume?
Yes.
All right. Well, that'll help. If you eliminate
not much.
You're going to have to avoid caffeine. Because it will amplify caffeine. I detest prednisone, and they put me on it a couple times, and last time I just said, no. I mean, I wasn't in the position you're in. I mean, I think you were physically debilitated, but for me it was like with the tonsil surgery, they were like, put me on prednisone to reduce the swelling. I'm like, nope. Nope.
Yeah. So hopefully that's my last update for a while.
Yeah.
So are they going to taper you off at some point soon, or are they going to?
Yeah, at the end of the month. Oh, the end of the 30 days, not the end of this calendar month.
Right.
So like two more weeks, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be the fun time when I'm at the end of my taper and I start to get all paranoid. Am I just achy, or is that what's happening? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, down there. Just a cough.
Yeah.
Well, no, and yeah, it's like, hey, at 40, shit starts falling apart. No,
I know. It's coming up soon.
I know. Are you guys doing something fun? Like, do you mark big birthday occasions?
Haven't yet.
Okay, yeah, I know. That's how I feel, too. I think Kelly actually forgot that my 40th birthday was on the actual day. And I'm not one to remind anybody, so it's fine. It was hilarious.
Oh, you don't have to share your birthday with Thanksgiving.
Well, no, I'm not complaining about birthdays. So, okay, well, anything else, or are we wrapping this puppy up?
I'm good.
Okay.
I look forward to T2 next week.
Yep.
I have very fond memories of that one.
Yeah.
Have we all already watched it?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed watching it this week.
Me too.
I
watched it last night and then followed it up with the pilot of Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah, so. I think I'm going to wedge it in somewhere between the second season of Sarah Connor Chronicles because it really is, to me, it's just such a different movie than The Terminator. And I'm also really interested to see, because I swear I've seen T3, but maybe not. And I know I haven't seen Salvation or Genesis, but I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
Well, T3, well, I won't spoil it.
No, I know. There are mixed reviews, I've heard.
Well, T3 has very little to do with the first two movies.
So, yeah, well, we'll get there when we get there, I guess.
So as usual, we have another recommended podcast, and this week it's Not in a Creepy Way. and it's hosted by three brothers, Eric, Jason, and Drew Anderson, and they, and I quote, probe deeply into movies, TV, music, and pop culture, but not in a creepy way. And I've been,
nice.
Yeah, I've been a listener for a while now, and I really highly rate the show. Have any of you caught Eric's?
No, I haven't come across that one before.
I have. I really enjoy this podcast a lot. These guys are—they're awesome.
Yeah, definitely. They normally take a single film as the focus, and they cover all genres, not just horror. So they have posted in horror, etc., before, and I try and like post in there as well, just to kind of get people listening, because you know, it still surprises me that people haven't heard of them, because that, you know, like I say, Eric in particular contributes to horror, etc., quite a bit, and he also is in the UNH Facebook page. But they're really humorous. Like, I was listening today to their most recent one on Roadhouse, and I was just laughing all the way through, and I've got a particular song stuck in my head now.
An episode on Roadhouse.
Yeah, that's the latest one. It's great.
I absolutely have to listen, man. Now.
Yeah,
I can't wait to listen to that one.
I am subscribing straight away.
And they're in-depth, but at the same time, it's very easy listening, if that makes sense. And I don't mean that in a detrimental way at all. It's just not some podcasts can be very dense and very factual, which is great, but this one's a really nice one to just kind of listen to and have a good time with. But it is still really in-depth, and you know, I learn something from every single episode. And for me, standout episodes are their coverage of Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, Copycat, but they do all sorts of recent ones on Memento. They've done, you know, what's it called?
Star Trek.
Yeah, the zombie film as well, the Dead Snow things, you know, Wreck. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just really laid back. They remind me a lot of my brother and I. We're very laid back too, like them, so... That's what happens when you get brothers who get along podcasting.
Yeah, and they're really funny, like you say, in a really kind of just laid back, straight way. You know, I just laugh at everything they say.
Yeah, but not in a creepy way.
Not
right?
in a creepy way. And you can find them on Facebook, Stitcher, and Twitter, and I will put links in the show notes. But you know, enough from me kind of jabbering on. We actually have a trailer from them, which is absolutely hilarious. So take it away, guys.
Three hot guys from the frigid north talk about movies coming into your ear hole, not in a creepy way.
I'm not sure I would really be enticed by a podcast offering to have a hot guy come in my ear hole.
I think that's already a porn.
Luckily, it's radio, so we don't have to prove our hot guy status. Visit www.notinacreepyway.com or search for Not in a Creepy Way on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or your favorite podcatcher. Not in a Creepy Way.
Next week, we're going to be looking at... Have you listened to the trailer?
I have not. I'll have to get that.
Like my kind of podcast. I gotta give it a listen.
Yeah, the trailer is so funny. He sent me two and he's like, should I go for this? I was like, definitely this one. This one is so funny.
Yeah, I'll have to get that from you.
That'll yeah, I'll send you one.
Did any of you ever used to listen to a podcast called Yeah, It's That Bad?
Yeah, do you know why it stopped? Because there was just no information given out.
I don't know why it stopped. No, other
like,
than I,
no,
I
conspiracy theories. They just came on and were like, "Something's happening," and I was like, "Oh my god, what is it?" And
one then, of the they tried very hard to keep their identities a secret successfully, but it was something to do with one of the guy's colleagues at work realized that they were doing a podcast. And for some reason, that was a big problem. And so they shut it down, or they stopped doing it.
Oh,
that's weird. So, where did he work? Area 51? Was he giving away government secrets?
I don't know. I don't know. But
really?
Yeah.
Man.
So, but it was a really funny podcast. I just thought of it because you talked about the way that these guys, in Not in a Creepy Way, have a, you know, are really funny and laid back. And for me, that's how It's That Bad was. The guys on there, they were all best mates, and they just had a really good rapport, and they were really funny. And yeah, it was a short-lived one. It only went on for a year or two, I think, but really good.
Quite a substantial backlog, so I would also really recommend that. And also for humorous kind of takes, How Did This Get Made and We Hate Movies are both hilarious.
I gotta check those out too.
Well, How Did This Get Made covers Roadhouse, Con Air, hilarious, especially, and Tango and Cash. And
oh my god.
Yeah, and We Hate Movies, again, Copycat, they cover, and it's just hilarious. Absolutely brilliant. So
nice. Yeah. I wish I could figure out a way for us to get away with covering Roadhouse, but I can't relate.
I would count
horror.
It as a horror movie.
I don't know. It's hard. I mean, I guess you could, but we'll figure out a way.
The sex scene in it is pretty horrific.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow we're going to make it happen one of these days.
You always have a sister side, like Dark Discussions. That's a horror fantasy podcast, but they have a sister podcast that only focuses on Game of Thrones, which is called
cool.
You Know Nothing, Jon Snow.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. So, you know, you never know. We can maybe cover those because I love that film.
Yeah, we will figure out a way to make it happen. Maybe we'll have like a UNH action zone or something. I don't know.
Yes. Can we get one to talk about action movies? That would be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, we should totally do that. And we got to include like some Chuck Norris films.
Oh, I won't be there for those episodes.
Oh, man. Chuck Norris.
Van Damme.
Yes, Van Damme.
I'll be there for that. Yes.
You should just call the podcast The Expendables. There you go.
Yeah, really. Oh. Expendables podcast. All the horrible action movies that are awesome from the 80s.
I'm so up for that.
Kung Fury.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.